Want to advertise your business in a cost-effective way? It's time to give podcast advertising a try. Research shows a high rate of podcast listeners made a purchase as a result of an ad they heard on a podcast. Visit podbean.com/brands to launch a cost-effective podcast advertising campaign in minutes. That's podbean.com/brands.
Welcome to Yolitics, the home of cold beer and hot takes on Texas politics.
Hey guys, thanks for downloading and subscribing to another episode of Yolitics. I'm Jason Whiteley here with Jason Wheeler. And Jason, you're actually outside for this taping, man.
I am. I have stepped out because I was getting a little bit of cabin fever, even though I am still going into the office every day. I'm one of those unusual birds these days. But, you know, part of my day is here, and, you know, you just get tired of looking at the same four walls, and so you take 20 steps and new world. And we're just hoping it doesn't rain. I've felt a few sprinkles.
Indeed so. So you don't have to, you know, turn on Twitter or turn on the TV or Facebook to know that we're not getting along on very many topics these days.
It's been nuts.
Very many at all.
And you know what? That's only going to get worse as we approach Election Day. And who knows, maybe even well after Election Day, it's going to continue that way. But there are some odd issues where people are finding common ground.
You and I both started in television in the 1990s, Jason, and for our listeners who are old enough to recollect the 1990s, there was a lot of crime. There was a lot of crime, and kind of the general thinking at the time during the Clinton administration and the end of the Bush administration was
lock them up.
Lock them up and throw away the key. So here we are 25, 30 years later, and there is bipartisan support on a state level, on a local level, and a federal level for criminal justice reform. Both sides have looked at this issue and said, you know what, we got to fix it. Not everyone needs to be going to jail for that long, and when they're in jail, they need to be doing different things. They need to be getting ready to come back out and be productive members of society. Republicans and Democrats, Jason, they both think this.
There's a lot of common ground here because when you get down to it, these are human beings. And in many cases, they are human beings who, you know, however long you lock them up, they usually, for the most part, are going to come back out. And then they're going to be your neighbor or my coworker or your coworker, perhaps. And you want them to have some hope for their future when they get back out. And you want them, hopefully, to be reformed and to not be on a path right back to prison again.
And there's an organization in Texas called Unlocking Doors. This is a reentry organization. It essentially helps ex-offenders getting out of TDCJ, the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, find work, find people who will hire them. But it's a lot broader than this, and the founder is one of our guests today. It's Christina Melton Crane, and she is the first woman to ever chair the Texas Board of Criminal Justice. How in the world did criminal justice become a bipartisan issue? Because people can't agree on anything these days. But Republicans and Democrats both agree that the criminal justice system needs to be reformed. You have conservative credentials. We saw what President Trump did. Why the common ground on this? It's great, but I don't understand why.
Yes, Jason, you're absolutely right. This issue, like I said, affects all of us from a taxpayer standpoint, from a community public safety standpoint. And really, it gets to the heart of what our community fabric is made of, the family. And it breaks down the family fabric. So, you know, at the end of the day, it affects every one of us, and all of us should be interested in this. I think it's beautiful to see both sides of the political aisle come together and work on this issue. We may not all get there the same way, but at the end of the day, we have the same core goal in mind.
Yeah, I would argue that Texas is still known to many parts of the country as the place where they kill them, speaking of inmates on death row. But at the very least, Texas is known as the place where you lock them up, too, with a prison population that, you know, I think it's above 130,000 inmates in this state. For people who don't know about Unlocking Doors, what you all do is you give this path to take somebody because they get dropped off, almost no money in their pocket, no job, no nothing after prison. And then what? You have a situation where somebody is likely to reoffend because they've got to put food on the table, or it maybe is all they know. And so you're giving them sort of a glide path out of prison to integrate back into society again. And that's why I think you find the bipartisanship on this, because this affects every single one of us. If somebody's going to come out of prison, I'd like them to be reformed and to have a pathway and not to feel like they've got to commit another crime. And you all have done that for 10 years now.
So the symposium that is coming up next Tuesday brings all kinds of people together. I mean, I think there's social workers, there's lawmakers, the TDCJ executive director, Brian Collier, is on there. There are a number of voices, former offenders as well, too. But our second guest is going to be debuting, or at least premiering, a short film there. Our second guest is Cynthia Salzman-Mondell. She's created more than 40 films over the years. But this one she is showing next Tuesday at the symposium is called In Her Shoes. And Cynthia is with us. Cynthia, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
In this film, you follow, 64 women at the Dallas County Jail? Is that right?
Well, basically, I tell stories. I give them a voice in my film. And it's really important to me because In Her Shoes was not supposed to be a film. It was part of a bigger project, and it was going to be integrated into another film that I'm working on called Soul Sisters.
What in the world do shoes have to do with women incarcerated at the county jail?
Shoes have everything to do with every woman alive. I mean, we love and basically, I mean, I started this. It's a fascinating. I mean, I find it fascinating when I think about what I've done, because I'm a filmmaker. I work with my husband. We form Media Projects, which is over 40 years old. We did the films for the 6-4 on the life of the life, death, and legacy of John Kennedy for the 6-4 Museum, and we've done films that have shown all over the world, mostly about social issues. And I wanted to honor my mother, who had pancreatic cancer and passed away from pancreatic cancer. When she was dying, we found a brand new pair of red shoes in her closet. And I took those shoes, my sister and I took those shoes, and we took them into her sick room. And there was something about those shoes that just lit her up. And she shared stories with us, and it really brought her joy. And I thought that we thought she was going to live. And of course, with pancreatic cancer, as we know very well, because it's in the RGB just passed away from it. It's very hard to defeat. And so, but it was those shoes that brought us, the whole my sister and my mother and I together. And I wanted to do just a short film about shoes and women, why, and looking at the question about why women love shoes. So I started, that was my search, and one of my outreach projects was at the Dallas County Jail. And I worked with a woman who has an art course, and we formed it into women looking at where they've been, where they are, and where they're going through the shoes they've worn.
And all this is sudden, women in jail, right?
This was at the Dallas County Jail, and all of a sudden they got so deep. And women started sharing really, really intimate stories and stories that they said they had never, ever even said out loud to anyone. And that some of them didn't even realize it themselves, that they had it inside of them. But it was through shoes that they started looking at their lives and through the art that released these stories.
Mm-hmm. So shoes are the vehicle here, basically, that allows you to sort of walk in their steps and tell about their past and what they hope for in the future. Did you find that a lot of these women who were locked up were hopeful about the future? Because it's such a disruptive thing in your life, obviously, to be incarcerated. Were they hopeful about the future?
I think that this course brought them hope. It was the first time for so many that anybody ever even looked at them as real human beings, that really took the time to listen to them. And so it brought them some confidence and some joy, and they felt good about themselves. And they also earned credit towards a college credit. So that really, I mean, when, you know, when they would get that, that piece of paper, you know, that said that they had, that they, you know, they had gone to college, that they had this credit, they were so excited. And so, and so I'm sure Christina, she meets some, so many of these women, and they're so down and out because nobody takes the time to even listen to them or think of them as human beings. And I think that's one of the things, really things that I'm real proud of, that when people watch the film, it, it puts a human face on incarcerated women, women who are that in many people's minds would be discarded. And so it gives, so it, it brings, it brings their stories, when people are able to relate to their stories in some human way.
Yeah. Christina, you're shaking your head as Cynthia is speaking here. You've heard a lot of these stories, but I guess you get men and women that come to you. I'm just curious, for people who aren't as familiar with Unlocking Doors, do they find out about Unlocking Doors, your organization, when they're still incarcerated at TDCJ before their release, and then come to you?
Yes, they do. They find out about us both before and after. We actually have a MOU with TDCJ, so they actually refer people to us directly. They give them flyers about our program. We receive a number of letters from offenders that we answer. And tell them where to come when they are released, whether that is parole or what we call flat time, meaning that they've served every day of their sentence. And I would just add to something Cynthia said, you know, the women are a whole different anomaly. Men and women in prison are very different and their needs are different. Women, for the most part, go to prison because of drug abuse, substance abuse, you know, lots of low self-esteem issues, that sort of thing. And what typically happens is a woman in prison more than likely is also a mother. And so what happens is you've got a female who's now been incarcerated with probably a caregiver of the child being a grandmother or other family member. And so to try to bond that mother with that child so that when she leaves, there's a continued relationship is something that's very important both inside and out. And it's important for us at the Unlocking Doors side, once they've reentered society, to make sure the mother gets a job, because she's not only feeding herself, taking care of herself, but she's usually, you know, taking care of one or more children. Where a father coming out of prison many times doesn't have the same situation.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about recidivism here? Because that's what this is all about, is preventing crimes from happening again from that same person after they get back out. Talk a little bit about the rate that you all have been able to produce over these 10 years versus the rate that we see widely with TDCJ inmates. It is significantly lower, and you all have helped, what, 5,000 people now?
That's right. Thank you, Jason. Our rate is 8%. Meaning that 8% of our 5,000 plus offenders have not recidivated, have not reoffended, or had a technical violation. The state rate is about 23 to 25%. So we feel very, very good and excited about the rate we've been able to establish over the 10 years.
So just to be clear there, the people you work with, out of all of the people you've helped, 8% of them might go on and commit another crime after getting out of prison versus the state average, which is at 25%. So one out of four inmates who just come out of TDCJ are likely to end up back there again.
Yeah, or and our rate is based on actuality. So it's based on those who have actually committed a new crime, or as I said before, a technical violation, which means they violated some condition of their parole or probation.
Mm-hmm. Cynthia, how many of the women that you talked to, the 64 inmates, have been in there a second time?
Most of them. Many of them. I mean, these women are suffering from sex abuse. They've been molested. They've been treated so poorly. They've been bullied. You know, so many have been broken down, and a lot of them are addicts, alcohol, and mostly drugs. And so it's really hard for them to get any help. And I just think that a lot of them don't even know how to get help. So some of them, when you, nobody, it's really interesting. Not one of the women that I talked to over the few years that we filmed ever said, I don't belong here. Some of them were actually relieved to be in there, so they were away from their drugs. But when they get out, I mean, it's somebody like unlocking doors that can help them, but they all don't get to unlocking doors, not from the Dallas County Jail anyway. And so it's really important to have an organization like Unlocking Doors out there to help, to help these
right.
women.
It's about breaking the cycle, and there have been some reforms that have helped with this. I mean, this is a political podcast, so let's dive into the politics of it. As Jason talked about a little bit ago, there is an appetite, it seems like, with Republicans and with Democrats to affect criminal justice reform. We've seen some of that happening in this state, both of you, but let's start with Christina. What do you think we have seen in terms of reform that has been the biggest key? And what would you say is the outstanding item that still needs to happen, especially as we head into another legislative session here with, you know, both parties talking about a willingness to do something?
So I'll answer the question kind of a twofer. For several legislative sessions here in Texas, we've seen a dramatic change in the non-disclosure exemption expunction area.
Made
great strides in that area. We still have a long way to go.
And tell people what that is. It's for people to clear their record in a sense.
So there are laws that allow if you have committed a certain crime or you've been you have not recidivated for some number of years after you've been released from prison.
Right.
You're able to go to a judge and actually get an expunction of your crime so that you don't have to disclose that to an employer, to a landlord, et cetera.
Now you can have a life again.
You can have a life. Okay. So in other words, the whole purpose is you've served your time. Now you can move on. And we've made great strides, but I will say that there are a number of crimes that are still, you still have to show on your record. And so I get it from a standpoint of being an employer and also landlords. They're worried about liability. They're worried about all kinds of issues. So one of the things we're trying to work on is we've created an employment council, for instance, to work with employers to say, okay, we get the liability issues, but what else can we do from a legislative or policy standpoint to put things in place so you don't worry about being protected? You can hire who you want to, and if something happens, maybe there's better insurance, maybe there's fidelity bonds that are more secure, et cetera. The other item I would say we've made great strides in is occupational licenses. In Texas specifically, there are thousands of licenses that have criminal justice guidelines attached to them.
And we're talking about plumbing, electrician, cosmetology, all kinds of stuff.
All kinds of stuff. And it has been mandated for years by the legislature that we spend a certain amount of the Windham School District budget. Windham School District is the school district inside TDCJ where they learn all the trades and they get educated. It is mandated by the legislature we spend a certain portion of their budget to train offenders in occupational licensed jobs. Yet when they get out, if they don't need, yes, sir.
Christina, you just said there's a school district inside TDCJ?
Yes, sir.
Well, before you continue on, people are probably scratching their heads saying, what in the world are you talking about, a school district inside TDCJ?
Yes. Well, it's called the Windham School District, and the Board of Criminal Justice also serves as the Board of Trustees over that school district. Huh. The school district actually teaches certain offenders who actually qualify education. They train in different occupations. They teach behavioral and cognitive skills. I mean, the list goes on.
And then you get out, though, but can you use, let's say you learn that trade and you get that certificate.
Right.
You can't get the certification if you can't.
Right. If I have actually been trained in an occupational licensed profession, you've used state dollars to do that, and then I go over to take the test to get that license, the criminal guidelines may not allow me to do that. So we've made strides in moving those forward, but we still have a long way to go.
Cynthia, did you get a sense when you were speaking with these women in the jail as to what might really make a difference to break that cycle for so many of them so that they don't keep on ending up locked up and can actually be productive members of society and be reunited with their families?
Well, my observation, and not coming from them, but just my observation, is that there really needs to be a mental health component. And Christina's not talking about the Dallas County Jail, where people were put in there, some for a short period of time, but some of those women were there for a couple of years, and they weren't. But it's usually a place where people are put in for you know, a certain period of time, and then they go into other state jails, prisons. And so what I think that there really needs to be a mental health component. So many of those women need that. There also needs to be somebody to help them with their addiction, and there needs to be education. And it is political, because I mean, there, you know, not every person who runs every jail, you know, accepts the services that are actually offered to them. Mm. Like the art course was canceled a couple of times while I was filming. And
why was it canceled?
Politics, and it was offered for free. So I don't know, you know, but all I know is that that could be, you know, that's something that is a difficult thing for, who knows, you know, why. I don't know all the politics that are happening. I mean, maybe Christina can shed light on that, but, some of the services aren't offered, and some of the services in there that are heavily offered are religious in tone. And sometimes you go in there and there's just, you know, they have video, and some of it is just continuously religious video. So, you know, they're being fed a diet of white bread, religion. You know, if you can get out of a certain pod and you can get into a pod that can help you progress, and I'm not downing religion, but I just think that it's, you know, you just have to look at what's being shown constantly.
There may be, a need for more things like mental health.
A lot of mental health.
Yeah, no question about that. Go ahead, Cynthia, Christina.
Well, I was just going to add that obviously, and Cynthia's right, I mean, a lot of times it comes down to true budget issues. And, you know, when the budget is cut, programs are going to be the first thing to go. Because at the end of the day, the agency, TDCJ, is responsible for the healthcare, the feeding, the clothing, you know, all those, keeping the electricity on. I mean, you have to go to the basics. This is why we need reentry even more, because the more people that reoffend, they're going to be back in the system. They're not going to get the progress and the programs that they need, but they can get it on the outside if we continue to have this kind of programming and community outreach that we have.
I was going to ask you about that, because you know that with the pandemic going on, and you know, the you know, sales tax receipts, among other things, have been really down here in Texas. We're going to see some budget trimming, some budget cutting. Let's say it's going to be some pretty harsh budget cutting perhaps next year when the state legislature meets. How do you impress upon lawmakers and elected leaders that this needs to be a priority?
Just go down to the Capitol. You know, get with your legislators, get with those that you know. We do a lot of that. I do a lot of it personally because, of course, we're a nonprofit, so I have to be careful about what we do. But we do a lot of referral testimony, whether it's through our clients, myself, others that work with me. Bottom line is we have to show them, because they're not on the ground in the field every day seeing what we see in working with these clients.
Does it help to have a film called In Her Shoes where you see that these are people?
Yes, it absolutely helps. And Cynthia has done an amazing job putting this together. I think, you know, when you hear that the majority of them have rotated back in, even though they had hope through the artist in the film, et cetera, that shows you what's going on. We've got to have more funding for community-based programs like Unlocking Doors that can help folks once they get out and not return. A good portion of who our taxpayer dollars are going towards are those who are reoffending, who have been in 8-10 times.
It's not cheap to lock them
up. Not cheap. That's right. It costs us about $24,000 a year to incarcerate a general population offender. That's somebody that doesn't even have a medical issue or other custody issues.
$24,000 a year per inmate times 130 something thousand.
And it's actually
inmates.
147, Jason. I know.
Wow.
It's mind-boggling.
Maybe
someone
will do the math for us here in just a moment. Christina's
that's going to take a while.
Christina, you have a heck of a Rolodex or phone list. So I'm sure you reach out individually, but in the 3 years that I've been moderating this one panel for the symposium, several things have really stuck with me, and I want to address them both individually. The first is, this is not just about offenders. There is a huge push, and you mentioned it a moment ago, a huge push to get protections for businesses and business owners who take that chance and that risk and hire an ex-offender. You said more needs to be done with that. What specifically more are you hearing from these businesses? What do they want the legislature to do?
You know, Jason, at the end of the day, most of the businesses we work with and others that are coming on board are just concerned about the liability. It's not that they're not second chance friendly.
Right.
It's just as a pure business owner who's looking at the economics of it and looking at the safety of their other staff members, they have real liability concerns, which as an attorney, I totally get. There are fidelity bonds that already exist there, but we haven't gone far enough. I don't know yet what we could possibly put in place. We're doing some research on that right now before the session starts, doing a lot of talking. It may be a pilot program that gets started, is my thought. I'm thinking the only way to really get around this is to provide them with some kind of insurance of sorts that is backed, you know, probably, a high-end type of insurance. And some people will be able to afford it, some won't. But put something in place to where we can test it and see if it works. And if something happens on the job, then they've at least got something to protect them in a backup.
Well, you know, every year that I do this, I ask all these questions. I come up with my own questions, but I always leave time at the end for questions from the audience. And every year, the most questions are about sex offenders.
Yes.
Where
yes.
can sex offenders go? Where can sex offenders live? Where can they work? Because there is, number one, a stigma that they're going to reoffend. But there is a real concern out there that people want some type of resolution once they do their time, that they could move on and reenter as well.
Right. Correct. In Texas, we put everybody who's committed a sex crime into one big pot, whether it's the serial pedophile or it's the kid that had sex with the 15-year-old. Okay. And we, in talking with employers now, for instance, they get the fact that we put everybody in a pot. And many of them have told me that they are more than happy to hire the guy that had sex with the 15-year-old, because at the end of the day, are we really worried about him? Are we scared about him? He made a mistake. He served his time. You know, we move on. The people we're scared about, those are different. And that is something we're going to have to grapple with, because here at Unlocking Doors, I'll tell you, we take everybody, and we have a number of sex offenders that are rapists, you know, molesters, etc. And it is an ongoing issue. Fortunately, we've been able to find some employers who are willing to hire them. Many times it's because they've had a family member go through the system themselves.
I'd like to know from both of you, since we're talking about assessing the risks of people when they re-enter society coming from prison or coming from jail, both of you all have spent significant amount of time with people who are on the inside or who have just gotten out. Have you ever felt unsafe with them? Cynthia, we'll start with you. You spent quite a bit of time in the lockup.
No, I never felt unsafe at all. Not at all. I was with a group of women I don't know how I would feel if I were with a group of men, to be really honest. But I never felt unsafe going into Dallas County Jail, going through the halls, or, you know, going through the, you're sort of away, it's, you know, you have to weave around and everything to go on the back end. And, but I never felt uncomfortable.
Because let's be honest, there are real possibilities there. I mean, I'm assuming that you probably had to sign waivers to that effect, saying that, you know, if something happens to you, you know, the liability is not on the jail.
I don't think I signed any waivers.
Oh, wow, that's surprising.
County attorney's going to change that, probably.
That's very surprising. Yeah. How about you, Christina? You've been around a number of inmates over the years.
No, and of course, now having been involved with it over 20 years, I'm not. I will tell you, one of the first visits I made to a Texas prison, I remember there was this offender who was running down some stairs from his cell that was on a second tier. And of course we were with a group of people, and I looked over and I'm like, what's going on with him? Well, guard went over to him to find out what was going on, and he was upset because another offender had taken his coffee mug. And you know, we forget about how you have very few possessions in prison, and that was really important to him. In fact, I think his mother had sent it to him. It had some special meaning, you know. Unlike, you know, I go in my kitchen and take out a coffee mug. It's like, okay, one of 50 or whatever, you know, that's sitting there with everybody's logo on it. And I don't even think about it. And, you know, that was the only time where I stopped for a moment. And it was only because he was running. But it, once I heard what he was concerned about, I was like, well, I get that. I have never felt, you know, my safety was in jeopardy. In fact, my band, my rock and roll band that I sing in, we actually... every year, we weren't able to do it this past year, but we go and play at the Crane Unit. And I tell you, yeah, it's me and six guys.
You're the headliner.
Wait. So you've already dropped on us that there's a school district in prisons, and then just matter of fact, you say that you sing in a rock band.
Christina is a great singer. I've heard her do the national anthem a number of times. It's like, wow.
Yeah, but here's my point. My point is...
Cynthia, this might be your next movie, by the way.
Never look at her boots while she's rocking.
That's right. That is great.
But my point is that these six guys that are in my band had never been in a prison or a jail. When we left, they said, you know what? Those women are just like our next door neighbors or my wife or whoever. And I said, exactly. And they came to that on their own. They were not worried. They weren't scared. They said, you know... they're just women that made a bad choice. Something happened, or they got caught, or maybe I didn't, you know. And I think just to take it back to your point initially about why maybe we have congruity from a political standpoint, I think that's where people live. They say, you know what? There by the grace of God go I. It could have been me that got picked up because I drank a few too many. Or they have a family member who finally goes through it. And I love to see people who have never experienced it before go through it and then come up with on their own. Oh my gosh, these people, these are just people.
Hmm. You did say something about, ask about fear. And I will tell you that this was a low budget film. And I was looking for music. I did finally raise some money that I could get some money from some other music. But I had heard somebody sent me a clip from TED Talks, and it was a clip from some women who are lady lifers. That's women who have they're serving life in prison in Muncie State Prison, and they have a band where they composed music, and they sang in this TED talk, and it was just it was chilling, their song. So I contacted Muncie and I sent them clips from the film and told them all about it, and the administrator showed these women, you know, some parts of the film, and they loved it, and they sent me two songs.
Wow.
And then they asked me if I would ever come visit them, and I said, well, sure. And I have if I'm in that area in Pennsylvania, I certainly will make an effort to go visit them. But at the same time, I have no fear of them. And by the way, they wrote me their shoe stories.
Wow.
So you know, I couldn't go up there to film. And this was right before COVID. So, you know, it'll be a while before I can get up there.
So wow. But,
Christina,
it's a nice story.
My hair is kind of going crazy here.
That's no problem. Your job is to find people work, essentially. When you boil it all down to find people work, that's a pretty liberal position, but that's not what your conservative credentials are. Why in the world did you start this?
When I chaired the prison board, I realized there was a huge gap in the system. The gap was when the person got out and getting to the services they need. They don't have a clue what to do. And so Unlocking Doors was born to be that, to fill that gap. We are not a service provider. We are not reinventing the wheel. We basically partner with all the various service providers so that we're going to be your guide or navigator. We're much like your internal medicine doctor. You go to your doctor, the doctor does an assessment of everything that's going on with you. If he or she finds something he doesn't like, he sends you over to a specialist. So that's what we do. We assess you, we figure out everything about you, your needs, your work skills, everything, and then we're going to put a plan in place and refer you to all those various experts in the field that are going to help you. And then we monitor you on that plan to make sure that you get where you need to go. If something goes awry, then we recalculate.
Yeah, it's not surprising that this does play right into what a conservative agenda is, though, and that is, you know, getting people to work. Go out and get a job and support yourself.
That's right. I mean, work is...
So this speaks to both sides of the aisle very easily.
It does. And, I mean, at the end of the day, work is essential to a good life. I mean, that's the bottom line. Doesn't matter who you are. If these people are going to come out of prison and be in our communities, we want them to work. We want them to be successful. We want them to put back into the tax base. It's simple, but it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I don't think there's a party that doesn't want people to work.
Yeah.
And I know that both parties are watching the purse strings this time around, especially as they reconvene the Texas legislature January of next year. And I did the math while y'all were talking. and added it up. So for the 147,000 inmates in Texas at $24,000 a year, you're looking at $3.528 billion just to put them in prison. And that doesn't count, like you said, if they have some other issues like medical issues and that sort of thing. So again, if you wonder why that brings Democrats and Republicans together to talk about criminal justice reform, I think both sides care a lot about that kind of money being spent and just to lock people up.
That's right.
How many shoes it would buy?
How many shoes it could buy, exactly,
all those
Cynthia.
Rocks.
Hey, Christina, last thing here, and Jason kind of mentioned it earlier, but as we go into 2021, what is your legislative wish list? What's the you know, most needed thing for these offenders who are leaving the system?
Mm-hmm. Again, we go back to employment. We go back to jobs. It's going to be to make more strides in the occupational license area. It's to look at what protections we might be able to get for the employers, to start looking at what additional things we can do for sex offenders so that, again, they're going to be more strategically viably placed for folks to employ them. It all boils down to that. If they don't have a job, they are not going to be able to move forward. It's about sustainable independence that's crime-free. And although they're going to still need a place to live, transportation, and probably medical health, because that's really the barriers. Without that job, there's no way of really moving forward and being independent.
And the annual reentry symposium is on Tuesday, the 29th of September. It's from 9 to 12:30. It's free, which is great. Cynthia, your film will be a part of that as well, too. Christina, tell people how they can attend this since COVID's going on. This is all virtual this year.
That's right. So all they have to do is go to our website, which is unlockingdoors.org. They can sign up on our homepage. Registration is required, but it is free. As Jason said, it'll be from 9 to 12:30 on Tuesday the 29th. We hope to see everyone there.
And Cynthia, if somebody can't make it, how do they see this film?
They can contact me at media, if they go on our website, mediaprojects.org. That's www.mediaprojects.org. or they can email me at mail, M-A-I-L, at mediaprojects.org.
All right, fascinating conversation there. Rock bands and prison school districts. It's kind of amazing when you start to peel back the layers with people, the things that they can tell you about. Jason, I think there was a hopeful tone struck there, even though we're in this really weird time right now with the pandemic, and we know that there's going to be probably some significant budget cuts here in Texas. And so we closed there talking about, maybe, we will see this be a big issue in the next legislative session. You've covered a million of these, though, and I'm just curious, what do you think about that? Because we know that money is possibly going to be hard to come by in this session, and there's a million other things right now that are competing for attention.
Yeah, and Jason, the other deal is, there's a lot less money going on. But some of the things that Christina was talking about employers, second chance employers who might want a little more protection, some of these things, like occupational licensing, for offenders who are coming out, maybe loosening some of that stuff up, they would have no budget impact. Some of these might not have a budget impact, which would be great. I tell you, the thing that I'm concerned about, the prison school system, the arts class, like at the Dallas County Jail, which doesn't fall under the purview of the Texas legislature probably, but things like that are clearly items that really make an impact. And those are where the cuts might be made, because there is money that is allocated to each of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's going to be some big fights over a precious few dollars. We'll just see what the priorities are when we get to the next session, and also to the next Congress, which is just, a couple of months away as well from us here.
4 months away, Jason. 4 months away, man.
And now we're, 7 weeks away from election?
Phew.
So we're going to be busy.
If you haven't already
subscribed to this podcast, please do so now, because these are going to be a busy 7 weeks ahead, and we're going to get past all of the rancor and the finger pointing and the that candidate's bad and I'm good. We're going to get into some interesting stuff here over these next 7 weeks, and it's going to be crazy.
We appreciate
So subscribe.
We appreciate you listening as well. Take care.